It's the Two Smokes Podcast with your hosts, Thundersnow and the Wiggle Rat.
I didn't even have to distract you. You fucked it up yourself that time.
Hi, welcome back to the Two Smokes Podcast. I am the Wiggle Rat. Across from me is Thundersnow. And continuing along in our season of self-help, we had to kind of go ahead and do a real quick takedown on this concept of what self-actualization is. Because that's what a lot of these people are going to try to sell you. And maybe it's not really that mysterious. Maybe it's not that magical. Maybe it's not that woo, as they say. Maybe it's something that's really just plain and obvious that, well, most of us do, and some of you are just fucking up.
Well, some of you are fucking up. Some of you are doing it. You're just not aware of the fact that you're doing it. And unfortunately, there's a connotation that's gone along with the term that self-actualization can only be positive. Right? So the whole intent of the power of positive thinking and all of this stuff is that, oh, you know, it's an R. Kelly song. If you can dream it, then you can do it.
Problem is, some of you are dreaming of being an asshole.
See, and you're executing to 100%. Some of you don't think your potential is all that high, and you're right. You know,
God damn, dude.
Well, I mean, let's not sugarcoat this, right? There are winners and there are losers. And the magical idea that the only thing that separates those two is this willingness to pull oneself up by their bootstraps and do the work. There are lots of people out there that are busting their ass day in, day out, and they ain't never going to get another step ahead of where they are right now.
I don't know that that's true. I'm very, very skeptical of that notion because it, you know, as you've heard me say before, there are two things that you can say to someone, but you have to ultimately decide which one is more hateful. Is it more hateful to look at someone and say, I'm special,
right?
I have a talent. You could have never been me, no matter how hard you tried.
Right.
Or to look at someone and go, there's nothing special about me. You could have been me whenever you wanted.
Yeah,
you
well, and
it bad enough.
And both of them are bad in their own way, right?
Well, both of them. I know for me, it's far more hateful to say the former than the latter. To look at someone and say, no, you could have never been me. You're not smart enough.
Well, certainly that's more egotistical, right? So by definition, you take that with more evil intent.
Right.
Why would you say such a hurtful thing? However, when you get to be our age, and looking at somebody who's my age and going, hey, look, man, there ain't a damn thing special about me. The only reason you're not sitting where I'm sitting is because of something you did. To me, that's the kind of the same as wishing somebody an eventful life, if you know what I'm saying. Well, wait, you mean I could have done? Oh, well, fuck me then. I guess I screwed it up. Here I was trying to do everything I could to get ahead. You know, but it leaves out a lot of things, right? It's one of the things that when we talk about in these dimensions of self, that, you know, having a social self. Well, to some people, that's a dump stat. I don't give a shit about other people. What do I care about other people?
Right.
Well, you know, there is nothing different between you and I capability-wise. The thing is I actually invested in that. And as a result, I was exposed to more opportunities than you were. Simple. You're smarter than me. I'll give you that. I'm better looking, got a bigger dick, but you're smarter than me. And had you spent a little bit of time getting to know some of the motherfuckers I got to know,
right,
you and I'd be sitting in the same place.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's always hurtful after the fact to come up and say, hey, look, man, you could have done so much more. It's just not a nice thing to say.
Again, I'll use myself as a counterexample. You know, I go to pub now, and I actually know people in my community. Right? People that I've done business with.
As, right.
You know, we've heard people that I've had amazingly good times with.
Well, we're not going to get into your sex life on the podcast.
but we do Tales from Pub every now and again. And the point is that I had to learn those skills because the first part of my life I had spent very introverted, you know, very much, you know, focused on, you know, almost purely career and family.
Sure.
And by career, I mean I had a job that I didn't much care for, and I was going to school.
Sure.
So I could get out of a job I didn't much care for. But the point is that that left very little time for me to develop along that axis.
Right.
Now, because pub is filled with a very nice, amiable, friendly, and jocular basket of lunatics, it kind of wears all that shit off of you real quick. All that reservation, all that reverence, all that insecurity, all that restraint.
Right. Well, it renders you no use for it.
Exactly.
It doesn't detract those things. It doesn't subtract those things for you. It doesn't knock those skills out of your vocabulary. It just says, hey, look, you don't need that shit while you're here.
You walk in, everybody's drunk and crazy, and it's like, we all float down here, Georgie.
Exactly.
Just fuck it.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I early on, I had a father who, you know, made very clear, work smarter, not harder. Which, you know, I took to very quickly. And then as I got a little older, I had a mentor who went, look, smarter, not harder is a great policy, but you still have to work hard.
Yes.
And had I not gotten that second bit, I'd still be sitting across the street inside the fence wearing a gold badge and you know, chewing on the government tit for as long as I needed to until I could retire.
Right.
And we both know that neither one of us is going to retire, so that would have been a long, fruitless fucking search.
Yeah, my retirement party will also be my funeral.
Well, yeah. Well, I like to think that I will have kind of a little reception in, like, the ER.
Give my wife my jar of peanuts, motherfucker.
Well, I mean, I want to still be there, right? I mean, sure, the ventilator and the beeping and all of that shit will kind of break things up. But, you know, play the songs, drink the drinks, send me out, tell the stories. I'll be with you in spirit, even if I can't sit up and say anything. But don't save it all until the funeral. Don't plant me and then turn around and go, okay, well, now we're going to tell you some fucked up shit you didn't know about Thundersnow.
Write your poetry slam to the meter of the heart monitor machine.
Beep. Exactly. Exactly. But no, the whole idea of this self-actualization, right, it's taken on this such a positive fucking spin, right? And at the end of the day, for the purposes of the season, kind of the definition of self-actualization that we want to kind of stick to is this whole idea that you can sit down and have realize your talent and your potential within the scope of who you are as a person, right? Sure, maybe you want to be great at one thing, but to be the best at that one thing, you'd have to fundamentally change something about your personality, and you're just not willing to do that.
Absolutely.
So how far you can go and still be the person that you want to be. That's kind of where I want to settle in on for the purposes of, because we're going to talk about a lot of people who have a lot of crazy ideas about what self-actualization means. So just to set that baseline, right? And like you said at the opening of the show, everybody does this. That everybody has this. It may not be conscious. They may not be constantly aware of the fact that they're doing it. But, you know, every time you see something and it kind of tugs at you a little bit, whether it be, you know, a job listing, oh, I could totally do that job.
Right.
Whether it be, you know, correspondence from somebody in your social circle, hey, we're getting together to do this thing. Oh, I totally want to do that thing, right? You're weighing these things constantly, right? And more importantly, when you punch out of things.
Right.
Nope, that goes beyond what I'm willing to do to get to where I want to be. But that's kind of where we want to settle in. And the idea here within the scope of self-improvement is to use that actualization to determine a path, right? To kind of set some goals and do those things. Because one of the things that a lot of the self-help gurus, they don't do, they talk a lot about goals as an end state.
Right.
You know, do this and you'll get this. Very rarely do things work like that, right?
And certainly not that smoothly.
Well, I mean, what they're describing is a transaction. And the only real successful transaction in this model is, if you send me this $90, I will send you this book.
Right.
Or this set of tapes. Or you can come to the Hilton and I'll throw some brown meat with white sauce on it in your face. If you pay for the extra high ticket, you get the brown meat or the white meat with the brown sauce.
There you go.
But I mean, at the end of the day, right, we'll send you some institutionalized food and you can sit and listen to this guy in the brown JCPenney suit. Okay. And trust me, if you're going to the self-help things and they're given by a guy in a brown JCPenney suit, just punch out.
Just punch out.
Because I'm sorry. That, I mean, given the choice of the two, at least go with the Joel Osteen, Tony Robbins kind of. I almost God. Said Tim Robbins. I'd much rather go to a Tim Robbins motivational seminar than a Tony Robbins motivational
seminar. Folks, don't go to a Joel Osteen anything.
I crawled through a mile-long pot full of shit.
Folks, again, if I haven't covered this yet, when I was a kid, I used to go listen, or I used to go watch John Osteen, who was Joel Osteen's father, at Lakewood Church. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't get it then. I don't get it now. The prosperity gospel is a grift, though. You want to get closer to God? Read the book, and you'll be fine. But having someone say, no, if you want to get ahead in life, you know, send me $50. He never asks for money. No. But he does promise you money, implicit in you giving him money.
All you have to do to be successful is realize that you got to spend money to make money. That's all you got to be. And I mean, to be fair, he is a glaring example of what not to be, but he's by far well down the list of the worst grifters in that gambit, for sure.
Well, again, I'm not even going to compare him to the other grifters. Now, what I will say is that he is an excellent example of someone who's, let's be honest, fully actualized.
Oh, he's living his best life. There's no doubt. I don't think there's too many people that would disagree of having an army of ghostwriters churning out number one sellers for you every month as the checks come rolling in.
He's got a nice job. You know, he shows up and gives a speech once a week, which is cool.
Right.
He is inarguably good at his job.
He is successful, without a doubt.
Okay. So, and like I said, you know, he's got a wife, he's got a couple kids, got a big house.
Well, he's got a couple big houses, but he was on the Today Show this week, and Twitter melted down. Twitter was like, okay, you know, Savannah, why were you not all over this asshole? Why were you just giving him an open mic to talk all of his shit and sell his latest bullshit ghost-written book? Why weren't you asking the hard questions? You know, how many people stayed in your church when it was freezing in Houston?
Right.
You know, it's kind of reminiscent of the time that, I don't know, you sent all those people home and told them they couldn't come in your night. Where were those questions? But, I mean, let's face it. Today's show is not for hard-hitting journalism. The Today Show is for, here's the weather in every part of the world except for the one that you live in. Here are the things from Top on Reddit yesterday. And, you know, one or two funny animal videos or, you know, some soldiers coming home, those kinds of things.
Human interests.
Exactly, stories. Exactly. Well, and then we'll poke fun at the party that we don't like and prop up the party that we do like under the guise of journalism.
Right.
But no, I mean, Osteen is a great example, but I think that he's almost too charismatic to fit into kind of the self. I mean, obviously, he's trying to help people live their best life, but he's doing it in one dimension. His starting point is very much a charismatic interpretation of the Bible.
Yes, a decidedly curious one, especially if you know Christians.
Well, but that's the whole. I mean, charismatics are an actual genre within that breakdown now, right?
All right.
You know, no, they're not going to pull you into the confessional and have you. They'd much rather you just write the check. Write the check, you'll be absolved of your sins, and we'll move on to the next thing.
Well, because let's face it, you know, and not to get too deep into religion here, but I mean, a big part of Christianity is, yes, Jesus loves you. Please stop being an asshole, right? And Joel Osteen is very prone to say, yes, Jesus loves you. Stop being an asshole.
Right.
He kind of mumbles through that second part and doesn't actually call anybody out on their
phone. Well, I mean, you don't want to insult the people that you're counting on to keep your financial empire afloat,
that's
right?
That's the hustle.
Under the headline of people who live in glass houses and throwing of stones.
Right.
You know, we try to keep that out, but... No, the entire idea of this self-actualization, it's been around for a long, long time, right? And there are a couple of key folks that jump out in, I won't say the creation of this idea, but at least, you know, attempting to define it. You know, a couple of different takes. First and foremost, Kurt Goldsmith, who basically took this kind of utilitarian approach to it. You know, the goal of any organism is to realize its full potential for as much of the time as possible, to be operating at its greatest capacity with the most volume that it can before it expires.
Okay.
I mean, if you want to live your life on kind of this mean time to failure algorithm, then okay. I mean, sure, that's, you know. I mean, is J.J. Watt only self-actualized on the one or two games a season that he actually plays?
Hey, man, why are you so hard on J.J. Watt? People love that guy.
I'm not being hard on him. As far all I know, for all I know, the guy's a good guy. I mean, everyone seems to love him. But let's face it, he's been in the NFL for like a decade, and I think he's played 16 games. He's done lots of good stuff around Houston. One could argue the best thing he's ever done is leave Houston.
Jesus.
Well, no, I mean, the thing is that he's going to come back in another team's uniform this week and get more cheers than the team that he just left.
Then he'll play three downs, he'll get injured, and he'll be gone again.
Well, exactly. He's going to grab his right ankle, and he's going to fall over, and he's going to go make some Chunky Soup commercials with his mom. Am I wrong?
And that's sports talk exactly. With Undersnow.
I'm not a big sports ball guy, but I know that much. I know that much. I grew up in Orlando. Our basketball team was famous for hiring people right before they got injured. Or right before they got good. So, you know, Goldsmith had this kind of idea that the idea of self-actualization is that drive, that push to be the best rat that you can be as often as you can be it. And then along comes Carl Rogers, and Carl Rogers says, well, hold on. You know, this is more of a kind of a life cycle, right? This is a lifelong process. You can't pop out and just go, okay, I'm going to be 110%, you know, fucking Mountain Dew commercials and Sean White and shit, extreme from day one, right? I mean, the thing is you at 10 years old, you're pushing 110%. That implies you know a fuck ton lot more than you know when you're 10 years old, right? You're going to grow, you're going to learn, you're going to change. So basically what he compared it to, which it didn't exist at the time, but he was basically describing a Deming cycle. Right, you're going to think up some shit, you're going to do that shit, you're going to watch that shit and then react to it. Okay, did that make me feel better? Did that work? Was that successful? Okay, well, we're going to change it a little bit. We'll try that shit again. And so he's looking at it as much more of a process of discovering yourself as you move forward, which, you know, when we talked about the concept of self before, when we started talking about Lockean memory and some of those things,
right?
The idea that you're the same person at 10 that you will be at 50 is farcical. There will still be some of that person that you were at 10
right.
with you, but let's face it. I mean, not a whole lot of us are the same people 50 years later.
Well, and one of the things, so like for me, whenever I think about self-actualization, right, I think of that being like the top of the pyramid on Maslow's hierarchy of human needs, right?
Right.
But the simple fact of the matter is that it doesn't change the fact that that's kind of an oscillatory function.
Sure.
Right. You know, Don Meredith, right? Don Meredith says, show me a man who's full of potential, and I'll show you a man who's never done a goddamn thing.
Right.
So we go and we focus and we set our task, and even if we achieve it, we find that we then must raise the bar. Right. And continue to do more and greater things, even if it's not, you know, necessarily in the same line. It often is, you know, for example, maybe your goal is to, you know, get your degree in physics and this is your fully actualized physics. But wait. Now that you've done that and you have this degree that says, yes, this man can physics, then all of a sudden you want to get a job doing that.
Right.
Right. And then it's not enough to get a job doing that. You want to get a good job doing that, and you want the most, what you find to be the most interesting projects,
right?
And so, and then that goal gets a little, wait, maybe I'll be a better physicist if I work leading a team of physicists,
right?
Or what? However you view that career path, right, is one way it might go vertically. Horizontally, that self-actualization, you'll go, okay, man, now I have this physics degree, I have this physics job. Right, but maybe I want to be more in my life than just a physicist. Maybe what I really need is a shot of pussy.
Right.
So maybe I go meet this woman, lock her into a long-term contract. Right. And, and then I begin to understand the joys and comforts of being in a relationship, of having children. Okay, now wait. Now I'm fully actualized as a physicist. I've easily filled my potential and continue to do so.
Right.
However, there's also this other axis.
Well, but it seems more like a job now, right? Because now I've got this other area of interest. I've got this other thing that's you know, I want to be good at.
Yeah, believe it or not, and even no matter how much you loved your job, man, I wish I was at home getting a shot of ass right now.
Right.
Man, you know what? I wish I was at home playing Battlefield 1943 with my kid right now.
Exactly.
You know, any of that stuff. So,
and that's something that 10-year-old you, 15-year-old you can't envision, can't begin to understand.
Well, yeah, it is almost baked in that you can't just be good at the one thing. If you want to lead any kind of well-rounded life, you're going to have to sacrifice a bit of that.
Sure, and there's a thought process, right, that goes behind anyone that becomes a specialist. Kind of by definition, loses depth in other areas, right? To sacrifice things in order to go deeper into their subject matter expertise,
right?
You've got to give things up.
You only get 24 hours in a day,
right? So how you divide those things up, right? So you know, from Roger's standpoint, there's this whole, okay, is this still fulfilling me? Yes, great. Get up, put your pants on, go to work, go do your math. But on the morning that you wake up and go, nah, you know what? I don't think it is. I don't think it's enough anymore. I need something else. And that's where Granddaddy Maslow comes in, right?
Right.
Abraham Maslow comes along and goes, you know what? You're both kind of right. It is this overwhelming desire to move forward. And we want to perform as well as we can. But there's two things you haven't thought about. The first is that this is not just additive. Or not just subtractive. There's an additive process to this as well. Not only are we getting better, but we're letting things go. We're sacrificing things in order to prop these other things up. And oh, by the way, before you go shooting for the top of this pyramid and going, I am the holy self-actualized person, there's a few things you got to hammer down first.
Yeah.
Right? And it's one of those things where people point at children and say, oh my God, these kids, you know, They just don't get it. Their life is so wonderful. They're so carefree. How can they be so carefree? Because you're doing all the heavy lifting for them. There's no 14-year-old. They may be out there having jobs, and we've talked before about how rare that is these days.
Right.
There are still kids that are doing it, but right. Let's face it, we were the last generation that went out and had jobs at 15 years old.
Okay.
But, you know, the thing is those kids, even if they have those jobs, they're making extra money. They're making money to put gas in their car or to do whatever. Mom and dad are still providing the roof over their head and the meals in their belly and all those other foundational needs that Maslow's like, hey, look, man, before you can even start worrying about whether you're improving yourself or living your life to the fullest potential, don't even talk to me until you kind of handled these basic things, right?
Well, yeah, and you know the joke I always tell is I can't build you a space shuttle until you bring me a sandwich.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I can't work on an empty stomach.
Well, yeah. And I know that sounds like a very, very primitive reduction, but that's really kind of how this goes. Because I promise you, I'm going to be much more prepared to build your space shuttle after I get a sandwich and a shot of ass.
Right. And you know, at the time, a lot of people believed that self-improvement meant self-growth. And they took it as, well, we do these things to fix deficiencies. And Maslow's like, well, sure, we do things to correct our deficiencies, but there's also an inherent human need to grow.
Yeah.
We're going to learn new things. We want to try new things. There's no deficiencies there yet. The only deficiency is we didn't know that thing existed. So, we can't tell we're deficient at something that doesn't exist. We want to expand and we want to grow and we want to add things to our lives.
Yeah. You can't fix everything about yourself. Well, maybe you can fix everything about yourself, but if you spend all of your time just on trying to fix the parts of you that are broke, A, I don't know how successful you're really going to be, and B, a lot of that shit is fixed in growth. Mm-hmm. Right? When you reach out and you make friends, first of all, they will help you spot your bullshit if they're good friends. You know, find your relationship with a woman, have kids, blah, 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 blah. Oh, you shouldn't have kids or be in a relationship if you're broken. Well, you know what? I got to be honest with you. Having been inspired by women before to be a better person, yeah, you can.
Yeah, well, and here's the thing. Everyone's broken. Just pick your poison, right? Right. Some of us, the cracks are a little bit bigger and more visible. But no, I mean, the whole intent, right, is this idea of what's considered the psychopathology of normality, right? And basically what this is the high watermark that represents the average amount of acceptable fucked-upness. So the intent here is that nobody's perfect, and as long as you can kind of operate in that middle band and blend in,
right,
then you're normal.
You're normal enough. There's a lot of tolerance in there. I know that whoever you are, I'm prone to say me. I know a lot of people view me as being a little weird, as being a little off. But it's not just me. I'm not the only weird motherfucker in the world.
No, there's lots of weird motherfuckers. But as long as you are close enough to the middle, that in that neutral point, then your behavior goes unnoticed, right?
Yeah.
And we see examples of this in business. We see examples of this in sociology and culture and things like that. 30 years ago, if you had a tattoo, especially one that was visible,
yeah,
you were on the fringes of society. Oh my God, don't you ever want to get a job or something? And now there are CEOs that have neck tattoos and arm tattoos that, you know, below the elbow.
Yeah.
So as things become generally accepted, they just kind of fade into the background. You know, 15 years from now, the fact that your kid's kindergarten teacher is an OnlyFans star will just be, well, of course she is. You can't live on a teacher's salary. It will just be there, right? It'll just be acceptable. Actually, Jimmy's mom won't be concerned that Jimmy's kindergarten teacher is an OnlyFans girl. She'll be concerned that she's got a lot more viewers and maybe we can network.
Oh, parent-teacher night is going to be like on her door. If you like my work with your children,
hey,
children, can come we just, see me at OnlyFans / I don't know, Juicy Tootie.
Oh, whatever. It'll be QR codes by then.
QR
but, codes. But no, you know, the whole, you know, can we do some cross-promotion? You know, I know Timmy's doing well, and you didn't really call me in for parent-teacher conference, but I kind of wanted to talk to you about your social media branding strategy, your search engine optimization. How are you working that?
Dude, seriously, think about it. Because if you were an OnlyFans star, and you had the inclination to make a little extra money on the side, mm-hmm. parent-teacher conferences, they happen behind closed doors.
They do.
They happen privately in classrooms. I'm just saying, you lock that door, whatever happens, happens. Maybe she needs $200.
Dude, if you get 5 minutes later, just I know you like the whole crypto scene. Go look at the sheer number of crypto coins that are being put out that are completely sex worker only.
Oh, yeah. No, those have been around forever.
I know, but I mean, people are literally now taking their crypto and trying to create platforms. Hey, yeah. It's not just enough for the coins. We're going to give you the content platform as well.
Well, and it's first of all, single issue coins are just a bust. I mean, if you think people are going to be proud to go out there and say, "Yes, I have vagina coin because I like to look at vagina on the internet," it's never going to happen. The reason why porn is so popular on the internet is because you can look at it. You can bring your filthy, dirty shame home, and no one has to see it.
Fair enough. But no, I got an interesting story about that with the tour that I took in Galveston last weekend. I did the Red Light Historic District tour in Galveston.
Why are you always off as a freaky shit? Can't you just go fishing?
Rumbelina wanted to go do a ghost tour, and that was the one that sounded good to me. So, getting back to Maslow, what are some characteristics of self-actualized people?
Okay.
Self-actualized people are accepting of others as well as their own flaws, often with humor and tolerance. Not only do they fully accept others, they are also true to themselves rather than pretending in order to impress. One of Maslow's later responses to some of the criticism that was being thrown at his approach was the fact that so many people were identifying as having reached the top of his pyramid that he felt that he must have inadequately explained himself.
No, bitch, this is real work.
He literally came back and said, okay, you know what? Obviously, I'm not getting the message across right here, because for so many of you to feel that you have somehow ascended to the top of this hierarchy, I obviously didn't explain it well enough to you.
Right.
But, you know, because there were a lot of criticisms of, oh, well, if all it takes is looking like you've reached it, then why are you bothering to do all that work? Why don't you just do the little bit of work that makes it look like you did it? And that was one of the things that he later regretted, was that you know, because again, we're talking about things that can't be measured.
Right.
You know, it's very easy to lie. It's very easy to lie and say, no, I feel great. But no, these folks tend to be, and notice I say tend to be, it's not a rule, tend to be independent and resourceful, less likely to rely upon external authorities to direct their lives. Which is odd, right? Because Maslow's work was turned into foundational stuff for self-help stuff since the day it was written.
Right.
You know, these folks can cultivate deep and loving relationships with others. They tend to exude gratitude and maintain a deep appreciation even for the common blessings in life. So these are the folks that you look at like, oh, God, these people are rock stars. I want to be like them when I grow up. And then you mention at work that your kid scored a goal, their first goal on Saturday, and they fucking explode. Oh, my God, that is tremendous. You are so lucky to have such a talented child. Blah, blah. And you're like, what the fuck? Are you an angel? Did someone lop your wings off? You know, these folks, they tend to be able to discern between the superficial and the real, right? They have the ability to separate the wheat from the chaff. You know, like we were talking before, maybe you do have deficiencies. Do they matter? You know, I can't hit a jump shot. Okay, are you a basketball player?
Probably not a big problem for you.
This, yes, you're right. It's a deficiency. You cannot hit that sky hook from half court. But you know what? Let's go ahead and put that energy elsewhere.
Yeah.
Let's put that energy on not hitting the toilet seat when you piss at 2 a.m. Improve things that matter. You know, these folks, lastly, they tend to view their life as a mission, which calls them to a purpose beyond themselves. And again, this is Maslow's idea of characteristics. And he used all of this to pull together a list that he had published right around 1954. He published a list of people that he had felt had achieved the goal of full actualization. I won't read the whole list, but there are some notable folks on it, as one might imagine. Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
Albert Einstein.
Fair.
Aldous Huxley.
Okay.
Eleanor Roosevelt.
You know, she could have spent a lot more time on personal hygiene and just general beautification. That was not an attractive woman. What? Is that wrong?
Thomas Jefferson and William James, all of which could have probably used a little better hygiene.
Okay.
I won't call out the fact that you picked the one female name off of this list to throw. Well, she could have been a better looker.
I don't go around grading the evaluating the attractiveness of guys. I can only speak on those things and try and learn.
But no, after going through you know, and doing a lot of research into these people's histories and their upbringing and things like that, he felt that they were good examples of people who had established those lower levels, those foundational needs, right? The physical needs, the safety, had secured at least a modicum of a loving relationship and a support system to get them there, and were able to do those things. But, you know, it was criticized quite a bit. Eric Byrne in 2016 actually published a paper referring to Maslow's hierarchy as the game of self-expression based on the belief that good feelings are to be pursued. The whole critique of actualization, which Maslow kind of became the granddaddy of, right? He came after some of these people, but he was one who actually spent enough time to describe,
right?
You know, here's where we're going. And then the biggest thing is, you know, in Fritz Perls, 1992, the focus, as we were saying before, you know, it can shift from striving to become one's best self to appearing to be one's best self.
It can. There are a lot of people who certainly put style before substance. And I think one of the things about Maslow's description of what a self-actualized person looks like is that final one where he talks about people being driven to some higher calling.
Right.
Right. And that kind of, it kind of smacks of, you remember just a few episodes when we did the episode on the first episode of the season on toxic altruism.
Right.
It kind of smacks of that. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, it can be a very pretentious and very heady thing to walk around and saying, no, I'm helping the world.
Right. Well, and it goes into these modern phrases, right? These modern moves. Well, I'm living my best life. I'm speaking my truth. I'm living right. My truth. Your truth. Yeah, we've talked about that a few times, right?
Yeah.
No, the truth is everybody's, bitch.
Hey, there is one objective reality. Yeah.
But you know, those are the things. And so with this idea of self-actualization, you know, I want to take a few minutes, and we introduced the first four dimensions of our self-care areas last week, right? And we focused on, you know, physical, psychological, social, those types of things, which really kind of bubble up to the top of the list because, A, they're widely applicable, right? There's very few people, even if you're a couch potato with no intent of actually improving your physical self, you understand that physical improvement is a thing that exists.
Right.
So the last four that we kind of want to delve into, and it's an interesting way to put them in there because, you know, bringing up Joel Osteen earlier kind of ties into that. But also self-actualization is an aspect of these that I think everyone can identify with, even though they might not think it when they first hear these areas, right? Some of you are going to be very tempted to go, oh, well, that doesn't apply to me. Give us a minute. Let's see if we can choose to change your mind a little bit on that. But you know, the last four dimensions of self-care that we're going to be addressing this season,
right?
Using our emotional crash test dummy, still doesn't have a name.
You have shunned Bo.
But fuck Bo. I can't deal with Bo. I can't deal. There's too much feathered hair. I can't do it.
Okay.
I can't do it. No, there's just too much to it.
How have we gotten this far in the season and we haven't done the Bo knows himself joke?
Ooh. I know what Bo don't know. Damn it, I love that song and I still missed it. All right, fuck it. Bo, he's Bo. All right. But no, so the last four areas are, right, the professional self. So here we're going to talk about career. We're going to talk about you know, our ability to go out and affect change through what we do as a profession.
Right.
We're going to talk about the environmental self. And no, we don't just mean recycling and putting things in the proper bin. This has to do with respect for your environment and how that environment treats you. And that environment can be a cube farm on the fourth floor. That environment can be a warehouse floor where you're pissing in a bottle. That environment can be your kitchen when you're interacting with your family.
Right.
Because not only are you interacting with other people, that environment has an effect on you.
Okay.
Third in this list, seventh overall, spiritual self. So, you know, earlier, obviously, talking about Joel Osteen, this can be religion. This can be just about anything. I would argue to you, this is where your math kink lives.
You know, it's often an uncomfortable and unpleasant admission, but in its own way, the ability to make the universe a knowable, understandable place does serve a very similar function to spirituality.
Right.
So if someone were to say, you know, as a casual remark, that math and physics are kind of spiritual in their own way, I wouldn't jump that person's shit. I mean, intelligent design exists as a subset of spirituality for a reason. And somewhere in that bridging, you get that. And people enjoy and feel enriched by the fact that they understand things or that they've seen something first or that they've hypothesized or you did anything first, say, even experimentally.
Right.
So, yeah, no, I'm not going to argue you on that point, believe it or
good,
not.
Good, good. And for those of you that are out there screaming that this doesn't apply to you, we'll go ahead and define this for you. The definition of spiritual self that we're going forward with is having beliefs that are important to you and honoring them. Now, this is beliefs with a lowercase b. This is not a capitalized B. This is not some, you know, outside rule set that you brought in and you adhere to the tenets of. This is having something that's important enough to you that you believe in it. This can be your Pastafarian fantasies. This can be your anything. This can be how you center yourself, how you bring the bit back down to zero and deal with another day. It doesn't have to mean religion. It could be metaphysical if that's the route you want to go, right? If you sit down every day and, well, I'm a Libra, so how's today going to go? Fuck it. There's your spiritual self. It's a set of beliefs and you believe in them.
And
if reading some guy in the USA Today saying today's going to be your day based on the day you were born, fuck it. If it makes you go out and have a better day, good on you. You simple fuck.
I do find it to be wonderfully charming that the people who regard the Bible as being quote unquote just a book are a lot of times the same people who go, oh my God, here's a magic crystal that's going to take away all my negative energy.
Exactly.
Wait.
It's one of those things, right? It's kind of like people that say they believe in protecting life but support the death penalty.
Well,
one of those things.
Those people earned the death penalty. Anyway.
We won't get into how you're in life. Okay, and last but certainly not least is the financial self. And financial self is not a money before everything kind of idea, but it's about defining your relationship with money. It's about knowing how to use money and how to apply it to meet your goals and to further yourself, your family, further whatever.
Well, let's face it, so much of Maslow's bottom rungs of his hierarchy of human needs literally depend on money. Not because we're in a capitalist society.
But that's how you get your food and your safety and all of that thing now.
That's right. How we do it. And again, it's not just how much food you have. It's knowing how much food and what kind of food you need.
Well, and knowing what will be there tomorrow.
Right.
Yeah. Today I have food. Okay, well, what about next week? Next week's going to take care of itself.
Well, but no, that ability to understand your relationship with money, how money connects you to other people. For example, you know, one of the things you see on Twitter all the time is, we're going to boycott whatever.
Right.
Right? And although those things absolutely do not work.
Well, no, because no one actually does them.
Well, yeah.
It's one thing to go up there and say, fuck Chick-fil-A for their stance on gay marriage. I'm going to go get a spicy Chick-fil-A sandwich. The fact of the matter is no one does them as well. And the line at the fucking Popeyes is too long. Chick-fil-A's got that shit down, dude. We got a three-headed drive-through. There's bitches out there with iPads. I can be a mile away from the Chick-fil-A window and still be placing my order.
I got to be honest with you. What I really want to do, just to be a fucking prick, I want to start a franchise called Chick-Halal. And just wage like this gigantic holy war over chicken.
Dude, I'll go in on the truck. We'll park it right across the street. We can't paint it like a cow, dude. We cannot paint Chick-fil-A like a cow.
Well, no, yes, we can paint it like a cow. Because when Chick Vindaloo comes, the Hindu truck, they're going to know where we fucking stand. No, I really do want to do a Chick-fil-A truck. And our slogan can be like, Alu, I'll snack bar.
I'm on board, but here's the thing. We have to have the nice, clean uniforms, but instead of going and finding all the Latter-day Saints, I want to go find all the extras from the Smells Like Team Spirit video and put them, you know, with the nose rings and the dyed hair and the tattoos, but in the same clean-cut outfits. Oh, God, dude, I'm telling you. Okay. I like this idea. We're going to make this shit happen after the show. After the show, we'll go work this out. I know a guy who sells us a truck cheap.
I think you're trying to do Creed fully. And I don't... Again, you're not making Christianity better. You're just making rock music worse. Please stop.
Dude, you want to know how bad things have gotten for some of those guys? One of the main guy, the guitar player from Creed.
Yeah.
He's had his own band for 15 years, and he just wants Creed to get back together.
I don't blame him.
And I'm like, dude, you've been doing this for 15 years, and you're still like, oh, I miss my old band. I miss my old band. Really?
Ugh. Well, he's still hanging out in his garage, I'm sure, with arms wide open. You knew I wasn't going to let that joke.
No, I mean, you can. I get you. All right, but so those are the new dimensions. And why are they important? Like I said, these almost seem secondary to the ones that we introduced in the last show. But I think that, as we go forward and we use these examples, you should at least be able to start seeing now kind of the way these things stack and the interactivity between them, right? They overlap in a lot of places. My spiritual self, I get my zen by going out in the woods and walking so far out that my cell phone doesn't work, I don't see other people, and I just decompress. That also plays into the physical self.
Right.
That, you know, that can apply, that has an effect on my social self as well. It definitely tells a story about my social self.
And again, we refer to these as axes as a matter of convenience. We don't mean them, you know, as in the strictest mathematical sense. Because again, as we discussed last show, these axes are not what we call orthogonal. As you move down one axis, then it's obviously going to affect the other. For example, if you move down the axis of your professional self and you constantly improve, odds are pretty good your financial self is going to get a lot better.
Maybe not to the order of magnitude that it used to be, but yes, certainly there should be a relationship between those two.
Absolutely, absolutely. Or if you think that giving money to your church or religious organization, if you feel like that validates you and enriches your spiritual self, it's also going to affect your financial self a little bit because that's money that goes out. I'm not saying it's not for a good cause. I'm sure it is. That's not the point. The point is that these axes are not orthogonal.
But if it's important to you, then that means that you need to find a way to factor it in to your financial self to make sure that you're not giving anything else up.
Budget that shit, young man. Budget that shit.
Well, in the church, most of the churches will do it for you very nicely. They'll find you, ask you for a pay stub, and they'll tell you exactly what you should give.
Well, because let's face it, the Bible's very clear. What is it? I think the Bible says it's 10%.
Something like that. Yeah.
10% right off the top, cut me money.
Right. Yeah, is that pre-tax or post-tax? We don't care. We don't pay tax. Yeah.
But I do, so they get post-tax numbers.
Exactly. But no, so we got a little bit of time left, and what I wanted to kind of touch on, and I'm sure it's not the only time that we will touch on it this season, but there's kind of been a running bit. There is always going to be a self-actualization-based self-help product in the mainstream. Right. Since at least the 1930s, 1940s, there has always been one that captures the public interest and just rolls. Right.
Yeah.
So, 1930s, Napoleon Hill, he basically wrote what amounted to the law of attraction for money.
Okay.
The book was called Think and Grow Rich. Literally focus on that one thing. Now, again, most self-help is trying to apply a one-size-fits-all solution to as many types of problems as they can. Napoleon was straight to the point. Do this, get rich.
Right.
Another 10, 5, 6 years later, Neville Goddard, who was kind of the... I won't say that he was the start of this law of attraction thing, but he is certainly the person that was kind of the focal point for everyone that came after him. And Neville Goddard was basically, his philosophy was, if you can think it, then you can make it happen. Basically, all you have to do is get your brain to understand that it's a foregone conclusion that you will be successful.
That's a little woo.
Well, so it's a lot, right? So from Goddard's perspective, saying, oh God, one of these days, man, I'm going to have a Porsche. Okay, there's your goal. You want a Porsche. So how do you envision it? Oh man, I could just imagine the day that I walk into the dealership and I lay out that check. Oh, you're imagining the wrong thing, man.
Yes.
Your goal isn't to make the money to get a Porsche. Your goal is to have a Porsche. So I want you to envision doing the big S curves on some mountain road in your Porsche in the sunshine and the tops down. You got a blonde in your lap for a roadie. That's what I want you to envision, because that's your actual goal. See, the reason this hasn't been working for you is because you've been visualizing going in and negotiating with a salesman. That's not your goal. So he's, and Neville Goddard is an interesting guy. If you get a minute, go look him up. He's an interesting guy because he basically spent 20 years refining this idea.
Right.
Get it in your mind's eye. Visualize it. Do these things. And on his back, around the 1960s, comes our friend Peel, who wrote The Power of Positive Thinking. Now, most of us, this is the first one that we've heard of, right? Everybody has heard of this one. And again, it's simply the law of attraction. Why are you sitting there beating yourself up? You don't think you're ever going to succeed. So you know what? Self-fulfilling prophecy. You're going to be a loser your whole life. So get out there and know that you're a winner. It's great. It's great. It makes great, compelling sports media. You know, Friday Night Lights would not be the same without Victor Peele. It wouldn't be. You know, it was that, no, you are fucking gods among men.
Right.
Make this shit happen. And so, you know, then it really started to take, right? Because old boy was on Donahue. He was on everything, right? Going around going, no, this is why you people are miserable.
Go ask your parents who Donahue is, kids.
Yeah.
He was like white male Oprah.
He was the daytime Merv Griffin.
Okay.
See, Donahue was the shot during the day, right? He was like right in between, The Price is Right and the start of the soap operas.
Okay.
But then after school, right before the news came on, you got Merv Griffin. Merv Griffin would come on and he'd get a little racier, right? He'd throw out some off-color shit. And then if you stayed up past bedtime, you finish it off with Johnny. And Johnny would bring in, what's her name? oh, shit.
Morgan Fairchild, Charo.
The comedian. Joan Rivers. There you go. I lost Joan Rivers there for a minute. I couldn't get it out.
Dude, a comic genius.
And Joan Rivers would just tear shit up.
That bitch would wreck shop.
Right until the day she died, that bitch was dropping bombs. But, you know, so that lasted for a good long time, right? Power of Positive Thinking rolled for most of our childhood. Then right around the time we graduated high school, Tony Robbins jumps on the scene, right?
Right.
Tony Robbins, same message. But you know what? We're coming out of the 80s. We're power broker style, right? The coffee's for closers. Money is all, yeah. You know, and so he puts out...
Greed is good.
Exactly. He puts out Unleash the Giant Within.
Oh, God.
This is aggressive, right? This is a Ronnie James Dio album is what this is.
You never have to be the last in line.
Exactly. Never again. But, you know, but again, the great thing that this has in common, all of these books have in common, is they are the exact fucking message. All you got to do... Focus on it. See it happening. Go out and do it.
Right.
Well, wait. Isn't the biggest part of this the go out and do it part?
Yeah, the getting it done, as it turns out, that's where the business end of it is.
But that's kind of where things start to fall apart, right? Is that people start going, well, wait, man. It's not really happening. And not unlike the guy we were talking about at the beginning of the show. It's like, well, I mean, but yeah, you know, it's not happening because you're not doing it right. You don't believe enough.
Yeah. So here's the deal. You know, whenever we talk about positively visualizing stuff, right? Again, I retreat back to the analogy between prayer and meditation, right? If you go and you hit your knees at night and you pray because, I don't know, let's say, for example, you want a wife. God, please send me a good woman. All I want to have a good woman, okay? This is... In this clear head space that you have, much similar to as you do when you meditate, right? Because you've literally reserved this time, set this time aside to talk privately with God,
right?
Okay? But the point is that because you can clear your mind and you can focus on just that one thing via prayer, When you come out of that headspace, maybe you're a little more prone to notice it.
Right.
And that's not really belief. That's just being a little more aware of your surroundings.
Right. Well, and it actually has a name. The current, right? Tony Robbins was dethroned about a decade ago.
Somebody obviously unleashed a bigger giant.
I have to look up the name. I don't have it. All right. Well, anyway, I can't think of the chick's name. But the book is The Secret. Now, The Secret has been on Oprah's list. It's been on the New York Times bestseller for months and years. It's had movies made, movies with sequels made.
Right.
It's been adopted by celebrities and power brokers and all of this. We'll get into The Secret in another show. But all of these things have one thing in common, and it goes right to the heart of what you were just saying. This is not belief. This is confirmation bias. This is the same thing about, you know, how often do you notice on your drive to work the types of vehicles that are driving past you?
Right.
You don't. And then all of a sudden, your trusty steed breaks down, and you go, shit, it's time to start looking at getting a new car. Now, all of a sudden, you start to notice the different types of vehicles that you're sharing the road with.
Absolutely.
And eventually, you whittle your way down. Hopefully, you know, in practicing some of our good self-care, you've done the research, you've done the homework, you know what you can afford, you know what car represents you as a person, you've decided on a make and model. Now, anywhere you go, all you see is that make and model.
Right.
And that's confirmation bias. This is, you are focusing on only good things. And what that does is that's designed to release those endorphins and get that happy-go-lucky feeling going on. And there's nothing wrong with that happy-go-lucky feeling. There's nothing wrong with entering into something with a positive outlook.
Right.
The problem is by focusing on that so narrowly that you often don't see the things that don't fit into your viewpoint. And that's where the danger comes.
Now, this is, many of you will recognize this because I know it used to happen to me quite a bit, especially, you know, in my 20s when I was going to college and things like that. But have you ever noticed how whenever you learn a new word, all of a sudden it seems like you hear that new word everywhere?
Yep.
Okay, it's not because people are using it more. It's not. That word has been out there in the random jumble of bullshit you hear every day. But now that you actually understand what it means and you hear it, it actually falls on an ear that can understand it. Whereas everybody who said it before, you just kind of tuned it out.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, right? You get to your brain can only process so much, right? Your brain gets so much running through it on a daily basis that just for its own survival, it has to go, okay, this shit's not important. And it runs right through the buffer and into the bit bucket.
Meow.
And all of a sudden, every once in a while, you know, your brain just wears out, right? And it takes those things and it just can't. It's like Vince Neil in the later Motley Crue concerts, right? I just get the important words out. I don't get all the lyrics out anymore. I just get the ones that I can. I've only got so much breath. I ran over to the microphone. So what you're going to get is he's feel good. And that's what you're going to get.
Woo! Lord! Kick heart.
Exactly.
No, really. I'm having a heart attack.
No, guys. Yeah,
kick me in the heart.
Medics. Medics.
Medic!
Give me some of that shit you shot Nikki. But so that's the thing, right? These authors, they use that bias, right? They get you to do this selective process, and they use that as a catalyst to foster your belief in their system,
right?
Because everything that you see that supports this happy-go-lucky idea is literally just confirming that, oh, no, you're on the right track, dog.
Yeah, it's all coming up, you know, whatever you're interested in.
Exactly. And so then if it ultimately doesn't happen, it just becomes, you must have dropped the ball.
Yeah.
It's not us. It's you. Look at all of these people. And that's the last bit I want to get to. With a lot of these, what we're starting to see now, in in this backlash, right, against celebrity and against power, right, in this whole cancel culture, and what we're seeing is that the ability to have positive thinking, the ability to try to visualize good outcomes for yourself, is starting to be seen as something that's only for the haves. It's starting to be seen that, well, yeah, you know what? It's very easy for a celebrity or a rich person to say, oh, yeah, I try to stay positive, right? There's just no point in focusing on the negative. Well, you can do that, you motherfucker. You were born on third base and trying to act like you hit a fucking triple. And so now...
I love that joke.
Oh, it's so great. It's great because it purely describes the feeling that you get from these folks, right? And we saw it in media this week. The whole Chachi reared his ugly head again.
Oh, what Chachi up to now?
Well, apparently Ricky Schroeder went viral for berating a Costco employee about having to wear a mask over the weekend.
Oh, God.
And it wasn't like he went crazy on this guy and somebody uploaded it. He fucking went off on this guy and then uploaded it himself. Like, can you believe the audacity? Costco will never get my business again. Oh, I'm sorry, Ricky Schroeder.
Yeah, no shit.
And, you know, put out a call to,
Nobody's gotten your business since Silver Spoons was canceled.
I'm sure that Ricky Schroeder's got more followers than I do on Twitter, but still, I think the world kind of went, eh?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, on Monday morning, Chachi jumps up and rushes to the defense of Silver Spoons Kid, who apparently was in a show. He was in NYPD Blue for a while.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm like, oh, well, shit. Okay, good for him. That's two jobs in 50 years. Good on you, bud. But otherwise, fuck yourself, Ricky Schroeder, because no one wants to hear someone who has all of those foundational levels, right? You know, going back to Maslow, you've got millions of dollars in the bank. So your safety and your physical protection and all of those things you're taking care of. You've got tens, two hundreds, two millions of adoring fans. Self-actualization isn't supposed to be a chore for you, fuckhead. Congratulations, you won the lottery. You may be mentally fucking miserable. You may be dying inside, but guess what? I don't give a fuck. To quote the great philosopher Daniel Tosh, you've never seen anyone sad on a wave runner.
It's hard to be unhappy on a wave runner.
Exactly. But no, so that's, we will dive deeper into the secret as we go forward.
Hang on. One of the things that I kind of want to touch in before we wrap up the show is that whole, you know, born on third base, act like you hit a triple. And oh, I just don't think about the negative things. First of all, there are groups of people in this country who fully, truly, sincerely believe that the cards are stacked against them.
Right.
That there is a systemic bias against them, and therefore they never can be successful.
Right.
The idea that I'm black, I'm supposed to be poor. I'm Mexican, I'm supposed to be poor. You know, I don't know the war on religion, or you know, maybe I got webbed toes. It doesn't matter. The point is that if you truly grasp onto that and internalize that kind of thinking, like you said, it becomes a very self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, and you're adding, right? Because you've already got that individual sense of, am I smart enough? Am I good enough? You've already got that in you. So why borrow?
Yeah, why borrow misery?
Right.
Let them people keep theirs.
Well, yeah, but you're a member of this society. You're a member of this culture. And you're a member of this in-group. And you're going to be, well, wait a minute. Wait, because I'm this color, I can't be rich. There's a dozen people that are my color that are rich.
Yep.
Because I'm this race or this creed or this sex, I can't be smart. There's a bunch of people
yep.
that are smart. So, yeah, get the fuck out of that notion.
Well, yeah, no, literally, I, by all means, you know, you want to battle racism or systemic bias, that's fine. But never, first of all, choose your targets very, very carefully. Second of all, yeah, don't internalize that idea too much to the point where it makes you fatalist about the idea.
Right. And don't take this as us trying to assert that this systemic racism or bias doesn't exist. We're not saying that whatsoever. What we're saying is you can acknowledge it, see it, you can even work to try to defeat it. However, if you believe that it limits you and you firmly believe that until that systemic issue goes away, you can't be successful, you're doing no one any favors.
Yeah, if you're waiting on the world to change, I got bad news for you. It's a long wait.
Yeah, even John Mayer knows that the world ain't changing anytime soon.
Right.
But no, I mean, the thing is the first rule of saving of life safety, was it life saving or personal safety or whatever, the first rule they teach you is save yourself first.
Right.
And you are not going to help any kind of institutional problem that's holding whatever group you subscribe to down by taking your membership in it as ultimate defeat.
Right.
You have to be able to look past that. Sure, people succeed from all walks of life. Not because they're in this country, not because the magical gold-paved roads of America, you know, proffered them some ability to do so more so than any other place.
Right.
There are people that are successful that look like you. There are people that are smart that have the same education background or less than you.
Right.
So don't internalize what you're seeing out there. Don't let that be a limiting function. And right. That's kind of what we want to do with this season, is kind of throw these examples and look at it from it. Because, yes, these things exist. If you're part of an in-group and that there's a profile of it, there's some kind of bias against it, you will observe it. It will probably apply to you. However, it doesn't have to limit you.
Right.
So that's the goal. That's going to do it for this week. Come back next week when we are going to start subjecting Bo. Fuck it. We're buying in. It's Bo all goddamn day.
We're buying in.
Bo, we're going to start subjecting Bo to some acid tests across some of these dimensions.
Sweet. I love it.
With yeah, <buddy. laughs> with the intention of demonstrating both how these things are related and how that really doesn't always matter.
Right.
So that's it for this week. Until next week, I am still Thundersnow.
And I'm still the Wiggle Rat.
Peace.